was to increase availability and access to parking spaces for those who need them, where they need them, and when they need them. And business owners are the main focus of that study, or sorry, the plan. The business owners downtown told us loud and clear that they wanted to see better enforcement of the two-hour time limit along First and Second Avenues so that their customers were more likely to be able to find parking spaces and come in and spend money at their businesses. So that was the main focus as far as how we developed a plan for on-street parking, not to implement pay parking downtown on street, but to implement better enforcement of our two-hour time limits so as to increase turnover and increase availability of street parking for the customers of downtown businesses. As far as the off-street parking lots, which I mentioned we had 500 spaces between downtown and waterfront lots, the goal there was similar, to increase availability and access to parking for those who need it, where they need it, when they need it. So city residents have a preferred permit that we're offering that will allow them all day free parking in our off-street parking lots, those 500 spaces. It's really important to know. We're going to have a Bonner County resident pass that provides the exact same benefit, all day free parking in our off-street parking lots. And then anybody who doesn't live in the city of Sandpoint or in Bonner County has to pay an hourly rate in our off-street parking lots who does not own a permit. So that's the basic premise here. We've all seen this. You see the Washington plates. You see the Canadian plates. You see the Montana and Oregon plates in our City Beach parking lot. Those are all visitors coming to Sandpoint, using our public spaces, using our waterfront, impacting our infrastructure, and contributing nothing to it because there's no way to collect user fees presently from anybody using our public infrastructure. So you can think of the paid parking for non-residents as a small user fee for our public waterfront, something that provides so much benefit and value to city and county residents, but which we are currently prohibited from using due to the overuse by non-county and city residents, the tourists, the visitors who come and take advantage of the free parking, the quote free parking, which really isn't free because it's all being paid for by Sandpoint taxpayers right now in the form of maintenance, in the form of replacing parking lots at the tone of hundreds of thousands of dollars, resurfacing, striping, plowing, all the things we have to do, patching asphalt. There's enormous costs that go into that that are borne entirely by the taxpayer who is being excluded from accessing those parking facilities because of use by non-taxpayers. So the paid parking in our off-street lots is really a way to recoup some of the impact that visitors and tourists place on our infrastructure by implementing basically, think of it as a user fee. Okay, paid parking is a user fee for the amenity that that parking provides access to so that we can afford to maintain that infrastructure using dollars generated by the people who use that infrastructure. It's a very novel concept. Something provides a user a benefit, the user faces a small cost to use that thing. So going back to the permit program, which we'll get into a little bit more detail, the goal here is for every city and county resident who thinks they're going to visit City Beach or the city parking lot at 3rd and Church Street, let's say more than once or twice a season, to purchase a very affordable parking permit that gives them, just like a dump sticker, unlimited use of that facility throughout the year. It's almost identical to the county dump sticker model, where every year we put a sticker in our window and we get free out. No, not free, right? You're paying for that sticker. I think the cost of those stickers is around $300. So
not if you're a county resident.
No, correct. But that's the actual cost of it. You're paying for that in your taxes.
Sure.
County residents are paying for that in their taxes. It's not free.
This will be a little different. You pay $15.
Correct. Yeah. We're not placing a tax on Bonner County residents. Mm-hmm. We're not placing a new tax on city residents. We're giving people the opportunity because, again, not everybody needs one of these stickers. Mm-hmm. So it's an optional thing. You're paying for a dump sticker whether you need it or not as a county resident. Mm-hmm. It's paid for through your property taxes. But our parking permits are going to be optional for people who are going to use public parking lots more than a couple times a year. It probably makes sense to spend the little bit of money that we're going to charge for such a permit. And then all the non-permit holders are those who are going to pay, and that's going to generate money to help maintain the infrastructure and provide other amenities and do improvements to our downtown area that parking serves.
So the permit is $15 for a city resident. If you're a county resident, it's $30.
Correct.
And one question I keep seeing on social media has been aflame with various posts about this, is that why are you charging the county people $30?
That's a great question. So we did a little, well, it's not a new concept here. If you're a city resident, you're paying taxes to the city of Sandpoint in your property tax bill. So our finance director did a little research here, and the average Sandpoint household city of Sandpoint household is paying around $1,800 a year in property taxes to the city of Sandpoint government. Obviously, if you don't live in the city, zero of your taxpayer dollars are going to the city government. But there's obviously other ways the county residents contribute to the city's tax base. For example, through sales taxes. If you purchase groceries in Sandpoint or you eat out at a restaurant, you're paying a 6% sales tax. Well, keep in mind, that's a state sales tax that goes to the state of Idaho, and only about 0.3% of that comes back to the city. So we did a little internal calculation. We found out that the average Bonner County household contributes about $48 a year to the city of Sandpoint tax base, where the city household contributes almost $2,000 a year towards the city tax base. So there's a big difference there, right? There's really no revenue being generated for maintaining infrastructure through the tiny, tiny portion of sales tax revenue that the city ultimately receives from Bonner County residents who shop within the city of Sandpoint. So that's the reason. You know, the typical city household is already contributing close to $2,000 a year that goes towards the maintenance of our infrastructure, along with all the other costs of running a city.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that answers that question for county residents who have persistently been asking why they're paying more. So the lots that are going to be paid, the big city lot between Church and Oak off of 3rd mm-hmm. Avenue. Mm-hmm.
121 vehicle spaces there.
Okay.
Which was just resurfaced last year, by the way. Cost the city taxpayer $530,000 to repave that parking lot. Mm-hmm. Okay. And unfortunately, there was no contribution from the users beyond the property taxes that city residents pay.
And I will mention it seems to me it was quite a good improvement.
It's beautiful. It turned out great.
And then, of course, City Beach is one area. There's the parking area that's this side of the bridge as you approach City Beach. Mm-hmm. That'll be paid along the Marina Street, which mm-hmm. goes out to the marina. That's going to be paid parking. Does a regular pass going to cover that since the boat users are out all day?
So a regular city or county resident permit will be good at all of those parking facilities, including the dock street by the marina. So that city parking, but we do parking enforcement from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and the city and county resident parking permits are good for 8 hours. So if you showed up at 9 a.m. or 8 a.m., whatever it is, mm-hmm. That's an 8 hour enforcement window. So it's good for a day.
Okay.
But not overnight. We already have an ordinance on the books that says no overnight parking is allowed at our waterfront lots, but we are making a permit available to marina slip holders or actually anybody who wants to be able to leave their vehicle at the waterfront lots for multiple days. We're calling it the marina parking permit. And the idea there is if you're a boater who needs to park right by your boat and likes to go out for multiple days on your boat, let's say out to Bayview or, you know, over to Hope or something.
Yeah, overnighting it.
Yeah, overnighting it. We want to give you the option to be able to leave your vehicle overnight. Currently, there's no permit that allows overnight parking at City Beach. But for $100 a year, marina occupants could have that peace of mind that they could leave their vehicle without getting a ticket. Now, keep in mind, I've had marina occupants say, well, why are you making me buy a $100 parking permit? We're not. You can buy your $15 or $30 annual parking permit, which gives you all-day parking at the waterfront lots. We don't want vehicles parked at City Beach and Dock Street overnight. Let's make that very clear. The goal here is to increase turnover so that those spaces are available for families who want to go enjoy the waterfront. So charging a little bit more for that permit that allows multiple days of leaving your car in the same spot at the waterfront lot makes sense, because we want to discourage it. We don't want to sell many of those permits. We'd rather people drop off their family, drop off their sack lunches and their coolers, and then go park in their driveway at home or on the street somewhere out in a residential neighborhood where they're not taking up a valuable waterfront spot mm-hmm. that a family could enjoy. Mm-hmm. Or another marina occupant, right? I've heard from most of the occupants of the Windbag Marina that if you don't get there by 9 a.m., you are not parking near your boat. We want to improve that. We want to make it a little easier to show up at 10:30 or 11 a.m. and get a parking spot near your boat. Mm-hmm. So part of the reason is, you know, people are taking advantage of those. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as a user of the marina myself, I will testify that lot is pretty hard to find a parking space there if you get there after by afternoon. So I typically ride my bike down there.
Yeah.
and then one other paid parking lot is the trailhead to the Ponderay Bay Trail. Mm-hmm. So that you're 8-hour permit would cover you there.
Yep. City and county resident permits would get you all day free parking there. We don't want to prevent people from accessing the Ponderay Bay Trail. We do want to make it a little bit harder for, you know, non-residents to go park their cars there and spend all day on the trail without contributing towards its upkeep. And that's a perfect example of a parking facility that desperately needs some maintenance, right? My goal is within a couple of years to have made enough revenue to justify paving that parking lot, to justify putting in, you know, better facilities there. It's a porta potty and a, you know, pretty crummy, uneven gravel surface right now, but we just can't justify investing in it unless it's generating any revenue.
And that lot does tend to be full quite a bit as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
A lot of the users of the Ponderay Bay Trail, they park down at City Beach or with that little lot. And what's the name of the lot along Bridge Street before you cross under? Is there a name for that lot?
The mayor calls it the Lakeview Hotel lot because there used to be a hotel there back in the day.
There was a Lakeview Hotel there.
Okay. Yeah.
I could call it that too. Most people aren't going to remember the Lakeview
Hotel. I refer to it as the Bridge Street lot because it's along Bridge Street.
Okay. Yeah. And then there are two lots that are going to be still unpaid, and those are the lots that are right along Fifth Avenue in the curve area that goes by the bike path there. And why are those going to be unpaid?
So there's about 115 spaces kind of between Matchwood and the old Army surplus store there, by the grain tower. Those spaces are actually on Idaho Transportation Department property. The city has an MOU to manage those spaces, but we didn't think it was necessary. It's also, they're very underutilized. We know from the parking study that during the peak occupancy period, it's less than 50% of those spaces are being used. So those are exactly the kind of spaces you want to encourage, let's say, downtown employees to go use. If a downtown employee doesn't want to buy a parking permit or, you know, is not uncomfortable walking 4 blocks to work, make those spaces available. We want to encourage people to use those spaces that are currently not being utilized. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to leave a large free parking lot just outside the downtown core and encourage downtown employees to use those spaces so that the spaces in front of their businesses are open up for customers.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, that same principle applies for street parking outside the core where you can't park unlimited amount of time.
Yeah.
Although I will mention, I can predict that those two lots are going to be totally full once those apartment buildings are with no parking provided for them once those are done. So
that could be the case, and that might be the outcome.
You want to take any bets on that?
Well,
that will be the case.
What are your thoughts on that, Chris? Would you rather than park in those ITD parking lots or on the street?
Of course, I'd rather have them parked there than on the street. Yeah. I, as you know, my office is on Church Street.
Yeah.
And actually, that's one thing I wanted to ask about as well. So there is a map that shows where the 2-hour free is. Mm-hmm. And that's basically First and Cedar and Second and a little bit of Main. So all that street parking is going to remain 2 hours free.
Correct.
They do have the option if you want to stay there longer than 2 hours, you could pay for parking beyond that.
Correct. So there was a recommendation early on in the planning process, a little over a year ago, where the Planning and Zoning Commission, which was kind of our sounding board before we took it to other citizen commissions and to property owners and business owners, looked at the results of the 2022 parking study, saw the extraordinarily high use of First and Second Avenue and Cedar Street parking. And they said, well, if you're saying we should be charging for parking at City Beach in the city parking lot, we should also be charging on First Avenue. So there was a draft version of this plan back in February or March last year that included paid street parking in our 2-hour zones. That was floated with downtown business owners, and they did not like it one bit.
Pretty,
of course.
I was at one of the meetings.
Yeah,
and they pretty roundly criticized.
There was just, I think, unanimous opposition to the idea of customers having to pay to park. So they came to city council and shared that. But by the time they came to city council, we had already removed paid parking from the parking management plan. But what they did say, and they're on the record saying this in front of city council probably in March or April last year, was you have two-hour time limits. Just do a better job of enforcing those. So in our search for a provider of parking management, so there's all sorts of companies, and we're all familiar with them. You go to any, you know, a lot of other cities or even college campuses these days, and
Spokane,
you see, Spokane, Coeur d'Alene, the University of Idaho uses a company that we ended up interviewing actually for parking management. But when we started investigating technology that could be used to improve enforcement of our time limits, there's some limitations we face. So the state of Idaho prohibits, for example, license plate reader technology. That's the simplest way to enforce time limits without having people check in at a kiosk or use any sort of mobile app. You pull up to a space, a camera looks at your license plate and communicates how long you've been in that space to the enforcement officer, to the parking enforcement officer, so that when they come by, they don't have to do anything like chalking your tires or taking a picture of your valve stem and then coming back later and taking another picture of your valve stem. Has the valve stem moved? Oh, if so, then you must have changed spaces or your car hasn't been there as long. So the state of Idaho prohibits these, you know, high-tech solutions for parking enforcement, such as license plate readers. But what we landed on was using a kiosk technology. So imagine you come along First Avenue right in front of your studio here. Every 10 vehicle spaces, there's going to be one kiosk with a touchscreen planted in the middle of those 10 spaces. So you get out of your car, you'll walk no further than 5 vehicle spaces to a kiosk. You will begin your free parking session using the technology. So the solution we came up with, and we looked at all sorts of different ways to do this, from cameras up planted on the top of a light post to cameras pointed at all the camera technology was either illegal under state law or prohibitively expensive, like $200,000 a year expensive. But having parkers check in at a kiosk, simple, one screen, you go touch the screen, enter your license plate number, begin free parking session, then you walk away. You now have 2 hours of free parking, just like you do today. The difference is, today, there's no option to extend your 2 hours. If an officer comes along after your 2 hours are up, the third hour, guess how much it costs currently?
Yeah, $50?
$50. Yeah. The third hour is $50 right now, because that's how much a parking ticket is. The second time you overstay, the third hour is $100. The third time you overstay, it goes up to $150. Those are the parking fees that we've had in our system for years, or the parking violations. Under the new system, if you're a downtown customer, that's again who we want these downtown street parking spaces to be for, you can begin your 2 hour free parking session. But if you are, let's say, at the Panada for a matinee, it's, an evening show, there's no paid parking. Of course, paid parking ends at 5 p.m. Or you're at the tattoo parlor and you're getting a long tattoo and you realize I'm not going to be able to get back to my car before 2 hours. You can either log on to the mobile app or send a text message or send somebody back out to the kiosk and extend your parking session for a third hour, a fourth hour, a fifth hour. So there will be an hourly parking rate beyond the 2 free hours that everybody has. Many downtown businesses have told us they think this is an improvement, because they do sometimes have customers that require more than 2 hours of parking. And those customers have a lot of anxiety right now about what happens if they don't go move their car.
$50 ticket.
Yeah, you could get a $50 ticket. So the option to pay $1.50 or $2 for a third hour, a fourth hour, a fifth hour, in some way, it's a more flexible system than we have now. Mm-hmm. Now, I fully acknowledge that there's a little bit of friction involved. Currently, you can park, go straight into the bakery and get your pastry and not worry about it. Under the new model, you'll park, walk up to a kiosk that's probably no more than 20, 30 feet away from where you parked, enter your license plate number, then go into the bakery. But no payment is needed, no transaction needed, unless you wish to stay more than 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. And give me more detail on how the enforcement works here. So mm-hmm. I go and I park. Mm-hmm. I do my kiosk thing, mm-hmm. and I blow it off.
Yeah.
Moving. So how is that going to be like transmitted to, how do you know when I've moved?
Sure. Every kiosk is connected via modem, mm-hmm. like 4G modem to a mobile platform that our enforcement officers will have in their hands. So when an enforcement officer is walking down First Avenue today, they'll go by every vehicle and enter the license plate number for that vehicle. And the app will tell them how long that vehicle's been there. If no parking session has begun, in other words, they didn't check in at a kiosk, that's a violation. Checking at a kiosk will be required. If the license plate number is entered and it says this car has been there for an hour and 20 minutes, no violation has occurred because they're within their 2 hour free limit. If the license plate is entered and they've been there more than 2 hours and they haven't paid for the third hour or the fourth hour, a violation has occurred. So currently we use valve stems. It's very tedious. They literally go around with a camera and take a picture of valve stems, and there's an app that they use that can, you know, look at whether that valve stem has moved. And that's how they determine how long a vehicle's been in a space. If the valve stem's in the same place as it was 2 hours ago, a violation has occurred. Mm-hmm. You get a ticket. Mm-hmm. And we have three enforcement officers who fairly regularly patrol downtown, okay, the 2 and the 3 and the 4 hour zones.
You just revealed one key component mm-hmm. here. You must go to that kiosk and put your license mm-hmm. number.
Yep. Like I said, there's a little bit of friction involved now, yeah. whereas currently there's not.
Yeah. So I'm going to assume a lot of people are just going to forget that or mm-hmm. even not know about it. They're mm-hmm. not going to know we have this kiosk system. Mm-hmm. They're going to pull up, they're going to park, they're going to go in.
Yeah.
Is there going to be some kind of grace period? Or?
So we're aiming to have the kiosks installed at our off-street lots and the street kiosks for time limit enforcement. Probably by the end of June. What the council has suggested is perhaps having a phased rollout of this. And I've confirmed with our technology provider that we can put any message we want on these kiosk screens. So we're thinking for the first several weeks, there won't be any requirement to check in, but people will start to notice the kiosks, and we're going to have signage as well. So very close to every parking space, you know, check in at a kiosk over here. It's highly likely that when we install these kiosks, it's not like on day one, you're going to have to start checking in or you're going to get a ticket. Rather, there will be a message there just educating the public about this program, probably with a QR code or a link to a website where parking permits can be purchased, for example. Any program like this, and we've learned this with all sorts of things we've rolled out of the city, take time before they're fully onboarded and the city is, you know, comfortable with how the program works. So, no, I don't think we're going to start, you know, requiring check-in at kiosks in the first week that these kiosks are installed. We could have a several week or a couple months of grace period as well, where we just use the kiosks as an educational tool, basically miniature billboards to promote and educate people about the parking program.
Mm-hmm. So let's take a look at some of the other areas of downtown where there's going to be parking limits. Mm-hmm. And as mentioned, First Avenue from, looks like, Church to Cedar, and then Cedar up to 4th.
I think 3rd might be the...
3rd?
Does it go to 4th?
Looks like it goes...
Maybe to 4th.
It goes to 4th.
Yeah, to the corner.
That's the two-hour mm-hmm. parking area. But then you have a three-hour mm-hmm. and four-hour parking areas. Are those also going to have kiosks?
No. So the 3 and 4 hour parking zones are really not changing at all from what they are today. We currently have 2 hour, 3 hour, and 4 hour parking. The mm-hmm. only place where we're using technology to enforce those time limits is going to be in the 2 hour zone. Enforcement in the 3 hour and 4 hour zone will still use the traditional method of the valve stem, the valve stem tool that enforcement officers are using today. It really wasn't feasible to roll out kiosks across 6x6 blocks of downtown. So we just chose those blocks where, as going back to the parking study from 2022, where occupancy rates were nearly 100% during those peak summer months. So no, there will be no change to the 3 and 4 hour zones that we currently have on our map.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are those...
And those will all remain free, of course.
Did you change those zone areas with this new map?
The only place where we expanded the 2 hour zone slightly was along Church Street in front of Cochava, Alpine Shop, Joel's Mexican restaurant. Those were 3 hour parking spots before. Those have been changed to 2 hours because there's some businesses there that desired that greater turnover that the 2 hour zone creates. They were uncomfortable with having the 3 hour parking in front of their business locations.
I actually would say let's extend that Church Street one a little further with 2 hours.
Okay.
If you want some input there.
The next block up, you've got the Daily Bee, you've got the post office. And you've got some offices on the south side of the street.
But you also have those two new residential apartments going True. Up. And those guys are going to be tending to park on the street, yeah. thinking, oh, I'll just go in for a few minutes, and 5 hours later. Yeah. So
one thing about the street parking as well, those 3 and 4 hour zones are generally where we had lower occupancy when we completed that study a few years ago. And there will be a parking permit available for people who want to park all day in the 3 and 4 hour zones, as there is today. There's already a parking permit you can come into City Hall and buy. That parking permit is just called a street parking permit, and it allows an overstay of the 3 and 4 hour time limits. It also allows unlimited parking in the street, in the off-street parking lots downtown. So for people who require the convenience of being able to park close to where they work or close to where they live downtown, there is already a parking permit called the street parking permit. That's $40 a month currently. So it's a lot more expensive than a resident, you know, off-street parking permit, but it comes with a whole lot of extra convenience, which is it opens up over 700 street parking spaces. I don't expect a lot of people to want to spend $40 a month for a parking permit. But again, that's because the street parking, we want to keep that open for businesses like yours, mm-hmm. offices, customers downtown. But for people who need that convenience, there is an option currently, and it will remain an option, to buy a street parking permit that does allow all day and overnight parking on street downtown, everywhere except the 2-hour zones.
Okay. Well, we've hashed it out pretty well. One question I have, I saw it on a Facebook post that was flaming the whole parking idea.
Okay.
And that is that the quoted rates, $15 a year for residents, $30 a year mm-hmm. for county residents to have get the all-day access pass. Mm-hmm. Is there an additional fee to process that? Because somebody posted, oh, it's going to cost... If there's a $15 fee to do it, so it's not really $15, it's going to be $30.
Right, so it's correct. Here's the truth, and here's what's not true, okay? No April Fool's, this is not an April Fool's joke. It is going to cost the city $14.50 for every resident or non-resident or street parking or marina parking. Every permit we sell through our portal, it's not our portal, but the webs or the company that we're using, costs $14.50. Now, what does that include? That includes the city handling... Nothing here. We've got a private company that's going to process every permit. They're going to check that the documents that have been uploaded to verify residency are correct. They're going to actually print a physical permit. It's a window sticker, just like your dump sticker. They're going to put that in an envelope. They're going to place postage on it, mail it to the address for the person who purchased that permit. That's costs $14.50 from the time the permit is purchased to the time it's placed in the window of the vehicle of the purchaser. There's a $14.50 charge for that. What's not true is that that's going to be added on to the $15. That is what the $15 pays for.
Okay.
So the city essentially makes nothing from a city resident permit, as it should be. City residents are already paying property taxes. We don't need, there's no justification for charging city residents for one of these permits beyond the cost of the permit itself. So for a county resident permit, the city will, quote, make $15.50 when a $30 permit is purchased.
Okay.
So there's really no profit being earned by the city from these parking permits. Again, going back to the goal of this parking management plan, it was to increase availability and access to parking for those who need it, where they need it, when they need it. It's not to make a profit for the city. Now, when it comes to tourists and visitors, we're totally fine making a little revenue that we can put back into our infrastructure. But we're not looking to profit off of city residents.
Well, let's explore that for just a minute. We're going to switch up to some other topics here in a second. But so the contract with the parking platform provider,
yep.
Is that $220,000 a year?
No. The contract, we went with the we had some options. There's what's called the hardware as a service option, or there's the capital expenditure option. Hardware as a service would cost us close to $200,000 a year. That's where we rent the hardware from the company. Mm-hmm. We have chosen to go the other route. We have chosen to purchase the hardware. So there's a one-time $200,000 to $220,000 purchase. The cost to the city ongoing after that one-time purchase is based on a per-transaction fee of around 35 cents. So every time someone pays to park, there's a 35, again, these are non-permit holders. Every mm-hmm. time a non-permit holder, a tourist, a visitor pays to park in the city beach or the city parking lot, they're paying around 35 cents that goes to the company. And then there's a little bit, of course, the company makes a little bit of profit off of these permits. Most of that $14.50 is the actual physical printing of the permit, mailing of the permit, and so on. But they have their own fee built into that as well. Mm-hmm. So there's no ongoing cost to the city of the hardware. We're purchasing the hardware. We're going to own it. In contrast, the city has rented hardware in the past. You can think of the automatic garbage bins downtown. Mm-hmm. That was like a 4 or 5 year rental period before we had those paid off. If we had purchased those up front, it would have ended up costing a lot less. So there's huge, the payback period is going to be less than 2 years for these kiosks that we're purchasing. We will have earned more than we spent on them within a year and a half mm-hmm. or so.
Okay, just a couple more questions that came up as you were talking. So you haven't told us what that hourly rate is going to be.
We don't know yet. So the city council makes that decision. We didn't have hourly parking rates in our fee schedule this year. Every single fee that the city charges for anything has to be in our published fee schedule. There's not a fee in our fee schedule right now. May 17th is the goal for adoption of our new fee schedule for the next fiscal year. So we'll be making recommendations based on kind of the industry, like other cities, comparable cities. $1.50 to $2 an hour seems to be pretty typical for non-permit holders. So that's probably what we'll recommend. But we have, you know, we have a whole team at the city. We've got the Planning and Zoning Commission, which is always consulted on these matters. So we'll be working with our team to make a recommendation. But just based on kind of what the market or what the industry is charging across other cities, $1.50 to $2 an hour for non-permit holders is probably where we'll land. But that's up to council. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
and of course, you can have seasonal rates as well. We might be in the case where after Labor Day, the rate is cut in half at City Beach, for example, or maybe there's free parking for 8 or 9 months out of the year.
Dynamic pricing.
There. Sure.
So bottom line, you can only kind of guess at what kind of revenue mm-hmm. you might end up with at the end, subtracting out all the expenses. Do you guys have a figure for
that? We've run some calculations. Yeah. Permits, not huge. You know, it totally depends on how many county resident or street parking permits we sell. But we expect probably across all the permit types, maybe, I don't know, 100,000 a year or so. Again, that's gross revenue. So when you take out the $14.50 per permit, it's going to be less than that. But for paid off-street parking, you know, those 2 months from Memorial Day to Labor Day, it's about 105 days. When you realize we have 269 spaces at City Beach and as many as half of those or more are probably non-city and county residents, you're talking a couple $100,000 of revenue just from City Beach, from visitors, mm-hmm. from tourists. Mm-hmm. That's really important to point out, right? We're really trying to get those visitors who are impacting our infrastructure, who are leaving their garbage in our garbage bins at City Beach, who are taking up, you know, beautiful waterfront property there for their enjoyment. We love it. We want them here. But there needs to be a way for them to pitch in to the maintenance of that facility. My goal is to have made enough money to repave the City Beach parking lot to do some basic improvements to City Beach in the next couple of years through parking revenue from City Beach, because that's how it should be.
And if you've just tuned in, this is the KRFY Morning Show, and we're talking today with Jason Welker. He is the Sandpoint Development and Planning Director.
Correct.
So, Jason, we got a few minutes here, about 10 or 15. Let's talk about a few other topics. First on my list would be, how are we doing with that sidewalk renovation expansion on Bridge Street?
Good question. So for those who don't know, about 6 years ago, there was a land swap where the city obtained about 8 or 10 feet of the hole in the ground at First and Bridge Street. We finally got to the point where between the property owner and the city and the resources we had from a bond that the property owner had provided several years ago, the city made the decision to move forward with the, you could call it the reclamation of that hole in the ground. So people who've been paying attention probably noticed a crane has been in that hole in the ground for the last month or so. They pulled the big steel sheet pilings out of the ground. They built a very large retaining wall and then backfilled it so that the sidewalk, which previously or currently is only about 4 feet wide, it's very treacherous. There's a lamppost in the middle of that 4 foot sidewalk. I've nearly clipped it with my handlebars dozens of times leaving City Beach on my bicycle. That sidewalk's going to be enlarged to around 14 feet wide, which is going to be fantastic. Mm-hmm. So the reason that project hasn't completed is that asphalt plants are just opening up literally today. April 1st is when asphalt plants open up. So the construction team doing that sidewalk widening will get back to work soon once they can get the rest of the materials they need to widen the sidewalk. There's going to be a nice steel hand railing over the hole in the ground there. And for anybody who's listening who's wondering, no, there's not a pending development in that hole in the ground. We wish there were. We wish there was something nice going there. But for whatever reason, that property owner who's not an Idaho resident has not moved forward with a development project on that site, which is why the city ultimately decided we can't wait any longer. We have to build our sidewalk in the property that we own. It's not costing taxpayers much at all because the property owner gave us about a $400,000 bond 6 years ago that we've been able to put towards that project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that sidewalk only being 4 feet wide, people...
It's currently only 4 feet wide.
Yeah, people spill out into the street, yep. So it is a safety hazard.
Yeah.
Okay, while we're on the subject of streets here, so there is a reconstruction project mm-hmm. coming from Church on First Avenue, from mm-hmm. Church to Lake, I think?
Correct, yeah.
And what's when does that start?
So that's phase three of our downtown revitalization. We're sitting right on the corner of First and Cedar right now, which was completed between 2019 and 2021. Anybody who's been here longer than that remembers that this used to just be a three-lane highway, pretty much four or five vehicle lanes. You had your long-haul logging trucks and your cattle trucks coming through First Avenue. The effort to revitalize downtown has been funded through the Sandpoint Urban Renewal Agency, which was formed about 21 years ago now, and we're approaching the end of that 24-year urban renewal window. So in 2029, our urban renewal agency will expire, and the tax revenues that have been used to do downtown revitalization will no longer be generated from the urban renewal area.
That's what's called tax increment.
Right. So what it means is the taxes generated from the properties in our urban renewal area have paid for the improvements in our urban renewal area. Mm-hmm. So phase three, from Church Street to Lake Street, we are in the design phase right now. We held a town hall or workshop at Community Hall just last Tuesday. It was very well attended. There's an update and a presentation from the design team at tonight's city council meeting. And people who aren't paying attention are going to be surprised, because we're moving fast. Mm-hmm. The goal is to literally start construction in September this year, and for that construction to be wrapped up by Lost in the 50s in 2027. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a dramatic and transformative reconstruction of First Avenue. I couldn't be more excited. The downtown business owners who have been involved, we have a technical advisory group. It's called several business owners. We've got representatives from all our citizen committees. Everybody's really excited. The concepts that our design team, which is made up of Welch Comer, an engineering firm, and GGLO, a landscape architecture firm, are super cool. It's going to really make that intersection of First and Bridge Street feel like a town square setting. You're going to want to be there. As we often say, we want to give people a reason to linger down there, so that the restaurants and the businesses can really orient themselves out towards the public realm. I had lunch with my wife at City Beach Organics yesterday, and right now that intersection, as I chatted with the owner of City Beach Organics, is quite dangerous. He mm-hmm. sees people get hit by cars nearly get hit by cars every day, crossing from the Burger Dock to his restaurant.
Right.
So to bring all that back to the human scale, the pedestrian scale, pedestrianize it, make it bicycle friendly. That's the objective of this project.
Yeah, where Bridge Street comes in, and you got to jog. So is that going to change the traffic pattern?
I don't believe there's a plan to change the current traffic pattern. We do want to make it far safer. So something like every fourth vehicle now tries to make a left turn onto First Avenue from Bridge Street.
Even though there's a sign right there.
Yeah. There's about six signs.
Yeah.
If signs aren't resulting in the behavior you want, it means you need a new design.
Right.
So we're going to rely on design, not sign. So for example, I think the current concept involves putting seasonal bollards in the road, so mm-hmm. that you're forced to make a right turn out of City Beach. Mm-hmm. You'd have to run over a physical barrier to make a left turn under the new design. Mm-hmm. And that will increase safety and also reduce congestion, because part of the reason we have so much backup and congestion right now is because people think they can turn left on First,
and they hang out there
and they sit there for 30 seconds, minute, 2 minutes, waiting for an opportunity to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's coming up.
Yep.
Is that project going to continue on to from Lake to Superior?
So the urban renewal area ends at the corner of First and Superior. So we could, in theory, continue construction south to Superior, using the urban renewal dollars. A couple questions are: how many dollars will we have left after we get to Lake Street? And can we get a final design for the rest of that corridor down to Superior done and finalized, and get the budget lined up to construct it before 2029? Because going back to the urban renewal area, it expires in 2029. So it sounds like a long way off, but it's really 2.5 years from now. So part of this effort, the First Avenue Phase 3, is we are getting to what's called 30% design for the rest of the corridor, all the way around the corner to Superior. So the same engineering firm that's doing the Bridge Street and First and the Lake Street and the Pine Street and First intersections is also designing down to Superior. So when we finish phase three, depending on what resources we have and what the priorities of city council are, we may very well continue on down to Superior and just finish the job.
One idea I saw floated for that intersection at Superior and where the highway comes in, basically, was to put a roundabout.
Correct.
Is that still
That's in the preliminary concepts. That'll be presented tonight at council.
Yeah.
Again, we don't have, that will not be constructed this winter, but we are designing for that intersection now in the hope that we can get it done in a few years. So yeah, a roundabout to just improve traffic flow at the entrance to downtown Sandpoint. Again, going back to design versus signs, a couple of years ago, City Council made the decision to get rid of the truck route down Superior, down First, up Pine and Church. So there's no truck signs on Highway 95 before you get off the off-ramp into downtown Sandpoint. There are no truck route signs along Superior. There are no truck route signs along First, along Pine, and along Church. But go have lunch at City Beach Organics and count the number of trucks that still use it. Why are trucks still using that corridor, even though it's not a truck route and they're literally breaking the law by doing that? Because it was designed for trucks. So you can put up all the signs you want, but as long as it's designed for trucks, trucks will still use it. The goal here is to get a design that trucks can use, but as our engineer said, they won't want to do it again.
Yeah.
So if a delivery truck needs to get down First Avenue to deliver food to a restaurant, they'll be able to do it. But they won't. But we won't see Walmart trucks cutting through downtown anymore. We won't see logging trucks cutting through downtown anymore because the radius of all these turns is going to be narrowed. You're going to see the drive aisles narrowed. We want to reclaim First Avenue for pedestrians and get the logging trucks off of it. And that's one of the desired outcomes here.
Yeah. Design trumps signs.
That's right.
You could say. So real quick, because we only have a few minutes left now. What's the update on the wastewater plan, and is there any movement towards getting some financial help there?
Oh, absolutely. Our public works team, led by Holly Ellis, our public works director, just got approval 2 weeks ago today to submit a large DEQ grant application. I actually wasn't at the last council meeting. I was at a traveling with my families, so I don't know the exact dollar amount, so I don't want to speak for her, but in the tens of millions of dollars, we're applying for support, financial support for that project. As you know, voters approved levy authority last November up to $130 million for a bond. The goal is to not have to do a $130 million bond. So our public works team is looking for every grant opportunity they can find to help support that effort. Meanwhile, the design continues behind the scenes as we move towards a more final design for that project.
Mm-hmm. Okay, last question here. Any update on the plans by the Avril Hospitality Company to redo the hotel?
I wish I could say I had an update, but since council, I think back in February, made the decision to move forward with the RV park, there has been no communication with the Avrils at all with the city. We have not heard from them. So I don't know. I wish I had an answer for that. We are moving forward with the RV park, though. We have a contract with HMH Engineering, a local engineering firm that's going to produce a fantastic design, fully ready to build a brand new RV park at City Beach. That's another project that we hope to begin construction on this fall. So we could have construction going on at the City Beach RV park and at the First Avenue revitalization at the same time. With the City Beach RV park, HMH is going to come also produce design and engineering documents for rehabilitation of the City Beach parking lot, which again, we don't have money for right now, but if we can generate some money through paid parking, I hope to use that design concept to actually completely refresh the City Beach parking lot, which hasn't, from my records, hasn't been resurfaced since the 1960s.
Yeah.
And it's in rough shape.
It's kind of showing it.
Yeah.
So if people want to get more information on the parking or any of the other stuff we've talked about, then go to the website. It's sandpointidaho.gov. I don't see where you could actually, I know you have actually a pretty good video.
So just to clarify, for some reason, our website requires that you put in www. Oh, so okay. You got to put in www.sandpointidaho.gov and then /parking. If you want to learn more about the parking plan, and there is about a 6-minute kind of explainer video at the top of that page. It's had over 1,000 views now, which is great. I'm glad people are educating themselves. There's about 27 or 30 frequently asked questions at the bottom of the page. So I literally combed Facebook forums as well. And whenever I saw a question posted in a comment or from a poster, I was like, okay, that's a good question. Let's go answer it. And then I wanted to direct everybody to that page on our website. So www.sandpointidaho.gov/parking, and you can get probably every question you might have answered there.
I can tell you, you can fix that protocol so you don't need WWW. Gosh.
You wouldn't believe city websites are not the most high tech.
Well, Jason Walker, the City of Sandpoint Planning and Development Director, thanks for coming in. Any last 60-second shout-out you want to make?
I guess, you know, you usually ask about the Traverse Park, James E. Russell Sports Center. I do want to give our city some props. We were nominated for and won the Outstanding Park Facility Award for 2025 from the Idaho Recreation and Parks Association. So that's really exciting. Ryan Wells, our facility services supervisor over there, who runs the James E. Russell Sports Center and all of our other recreation facilities, will be going to Twin Falls on April 20th to accept that award on behalf of the mayor and the city. It was obviously a long, controversial project, but the outcome, I think, has been hugely beneficial. We have 872 registered users at the Sports Center. We saw 2,300 visitors last month, and the facility is, I'm very excited to say, more than covering its costs for the last 5 months. Mm-hmm. In some months, far exceeding the cost of operations. So it's been a huge success over there. The paid membership is approaching 300 now. We've had Sandpoint Lacrosse, Sandpoint Tennis, Sandpoint Soccer. All these youth groups are using the facility, and the membership is off the charts. It's been a huge success, and Ryan Wells is owed a huge congratulations. Maeve, who ran that project as a project manager, is owed a huge congratulations. So excited about that.
Next up, basketball.
Yes. Oh, can I say one more thing, Chris?
Okay.
We are starting this spring resurfacing every outdoor basketball court in the city of Sandpoint. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We are putting new asphalt down at the Pine Street courts. We're repainting all the courts, and we've got brand new basketball hoops, NBA caliber, clear glass backboards, breakaway rims, sitting in boxes at the City Beach shop waiting to be installed. So by summer, we're going to have four new basketball courts at all of our outdoor courts. So Hickory Park, City Beach Park, and Pine Street Park.
Okay. We're going to be looking for that. Some of us more than others, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot, Jason Welker.
Thanks,
and,
Chris.
Thanks for tuning in today. We're going to go out right now because we're out of time. We're going to hear just a few seconds of Brandi Carlile, and then we'll be into Otto's Eclectic Mix. Thanks for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY.
Cool.
Have you ever wandered lonely through the woods? Everything that feels just as it should. You're part of a life there, you're part of something good. If you've ever wanted